thewellnesscouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives. Download the app today.
You're listening to Wellness Women Radio with women's health experts, Dr. Ashley Bond, the pregnancy and birthing guru, and the queen of hormone imbalances, the period whisperer herself, Dr. Andrea Huddleston. They're raising the bar for women's health by bringing you the most up-to-date health and wellness information to live your best life. Now, onto the show.
This episode of Wellness Women Radio is very proudly brought to you by Dinner Twist. Dr. Ashley and I want to let you in on our little secret of how we maintain our healthy whole foods lifestyle with very little time. And one of those ways is actually with Dinner Twist. So they plan, they shop, they deliver everything to our door that takes all the guesswork out of having really healthy meals for dinner each night. They also have an online marketplace, which is like shopping at your local farmers markets or grocery stores, but it's delivered right to you. I particularly love Dinner Twist because they're a local family-owned business here in Perth in Western Australia. All of their produce is locally sourced and seasonal, and they're really invested in their suppliers. Everything is so fresh and they're committed to using such minimal packaging. So Ash and I opt for, you know, the naturally gluten and dairy-free meals, which are really consistent with, I guess, a healthy paleo type lifestyle, but they've also got, family-friendly meals. They've got bigger meals for families, they've got express meals for those really short on time and vegan options as well. So we would love to give you the opportunity to actually try Dinner Twist and realize how healthy and delicious, but also how fresh it is. So we're going to make that a little bit easier for you. And we have a special promo code, which is WWR for Wellness Women Radio, that gives you $35 off your first box. So this is also how I convince my husband, Dean, that I can actually cook. So if I can do it, seriously, anybody can. So trust me, but feel free to not take my word for it. Please try it and let us know what you think. So without further ado, ladies, now onto the show.
Hey there, wonderful listeners. Thank you so much for joining us on Wellness Women Radio. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Andrea. And ladies, again, thank you so much for, and the guys as well. I know we do have men tuning in. They tell us that all the time. So, you know, welcome back. thank you all for, you know, just keeping up with us at the moment as well. We've had so many interviews lately, and it's just been so great to get your feedback from all of that, but also, you know, all of your incredible reviews and your 5-star ratings and your podcast suggestions. You know, we love it all. So thank you. And guys, in the interest of full disclosure, I want to say that this is take number 2 of this podcast that we are doing. And I feel like I need to say that because it shows you how incredibly gracious our guest is today. And I'd love to welcome back to Wellness Women Radio, Sarah Ruspatch, who is the incredible author of Beyond Booze. Sarah, welcome back and thank you again for joining us.
No, it's good to be here the second time, and I reckon we're going to do an even better recording this time.
So, guys, just so you know, in the wonderful world of podcasting, sometimes we have glitches in the matrix where it means that we lose all of the incredible gold that we'd recorded, and it was lost to the ether. But Sarah was, as I said, gracious enough to come and join us again because this is information that you absolutely need to have. There was no way that we weren't going to try and get her back from her busy schedule and her book tour and everything else and all of her, you know, TV, presentations and everything else. So let me go ahead and reintroduce Sarah Ruspatch to you. So she is the author of the incredible book Beyond Booze, and we'll put all of the links to the book and Sarah in the show notes. But she is an accredited gray area drinking coach, a menopause coach. She's an author, a motivational speaker, and the host of a huge community of women who are, you know, getting to the stage of this Beyond Booze. So how to create a life you love that is alcohol free. She's featured in multiple, TV sort of presentations and publications. She's a regular media commentator on Channel 9 as well, and she's supported thousands to change their relationship with alcohol and speaks to global audiences on this and the impact that it has on not only your health but your mental health as well. So, Sarah, I'm so excited to get back into this because, you know, every single day we're having conversations with patients about how, you know, particularly as what I notice in practice, as women get to sort of their mid-30s, they just get to this point where alcohol just does not suit them. And not that it ever suits anybody, you know, it is still a drug. It does still have, you know, really important physiological effects on the body that are not positive, of course, but they just can't get away with it like they used to. And particularly as women go through that hormonal transition into perimenopause, it is actually one of the worst things that they can do for their health that will create such hormonal chaos. So I'm love that we're having this conversation today. And Sarah, can we go back a few steps there? I've totally just rushed ahead to, you know, some areas that I want to dive into. But can you give us a bit of an insight into, you know, what led you to write this book and tell us a bit about you?
So thank you for having me and for that introduction. So I removed alcohol from my life 5 years ago. I just had my 5-year soberversary this past weekend.
Oh, congratulations. And Sarah, how did you celebrate that?
I went for a girls' weekend. We had massages. We went for a run. We had a swim in the sea. We had some alcohol-free champagne and we sat and drank lots of cups of tea, ate lots of crisps and put the world to rights. And so it was the perfect weekend.
Oh, that sounds like bliss.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was not an alcoholic. I wasn't physically dependent on alcohol. It's interesting. The moment you say to someone that you stop drinking, they're often initial thought is, oh, you must have had a big problem with alcohol if you've made that decision to stop. Whereas for me, it was more subtle, it was more insidious, and it's the way it is for so many of the women that I coach, in that it just crept up. My 20s and stuff, it was always alcohol use for socializing. My 30s and 40s, there was a lot that I was navigating at that time. We'd moved from the UK to Australia. I was quite homesick. I was quite lonely. I was trying to find my feet in a new country where I didn't have that support network. And this coincided with an era where the alcohol industry were really starting to target that mummy wine culture. There was a lot of memes, a lot of like hilarious, as people would have thought at the time, and I definitely thought at the time, was it hilarious for me to post a picture of me with, like, you know, those pictures that are like, oh, the doctor said I should only have one glass and it's a glass of wine that fits an entire bottle in it, but kind of going, oh, so here I am having my one glass. And I fell for all of that hook, line and sinker. It was, you know, it's a difficult time. You're navigating young kids, you're navigating all of these different changes in life. And then at the same time, we're starting to move into an era where alcohol use is being normalized as a solution, as a tool, as a reward, as a crutch, and all of those things. So my relationship with alcohol started to become just something that I was leaning on more and more. But again, I took breaks. I didn't drink every day. I didn't drink in the morning. Certainly on the outside, no one thought I had a problem. But I decided to take a break back in 2017. By this point, I was 41. I had started to notice every time I drank, I was waking up at 2 or 3 in the morning, couldn't get back to sleep. Alcohol was really impacting anxiety. I've never, ever had anxiety in my life. But I was really starting to, I was becoming a shell of myself. That's the only way I can describe it. I was losing my mojo. It felt like my light was going out. And I remember going to my GP and saying to her, I've got like chronic anxiety. I've never had this in my life. And at no point did the conversation around alcohol come up, but happily, you know, gave me that script for anti-anxiety meds and off I went. But I didn't take them. It didn't feel right for me. I felt like there had to be something more at play. And so I decided to take a break from alcohol. This was 2017. And all the things that had been a problem for me disappeared. So within a week, my anxiety disappeared. Within a couple of weeks, I was getting 8 hours solid, restorative, nourishing sleep a night. As a result of that, my confidence, my mental clarity, my energy, my motivation all started to increase. I started to become super aware of, well, if I'm not going to drink on Friday night, what am I going to do instead? It showed me where I had gaps and holes in my life that I'd just been filling with alcohol, perhaps out of boredom, perhaps out of loneliness, perhaps stress and things like that. And I did go back to drinking after that break, but I never forgot how good I felt when I wasn't drinking. And as soon as I went back to drinking, the sleep went back to being awful. My anxiety started creeping up. I was putting on weight. My skin started to get really dry. Like all of these things that had improved. And it was like, I never forgot that. And in 2019, I just reached that point of going, everything in my life is better when I don't drink. I'm a more patient mom. I'm calmer. My self-talk is so much more positive. And I then knew that if I was struggling the way I had been, then there would be thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of women who were as well. And so I retrained to become a health and wellness coach and a gray area drinking coach. And shortly after that, I did an interview with Mama Mia. And I shared my story of gray area drinking. And within 24 hours, 8,000 women had reached out to me. Wow. And every single one said, you've just told my story. And so that's kind of what has brought me. And then I got to the point where I wanted to write a book so that I could reach more and more women. And there's such a belief in society that a life without alcohol is a less than life. And I wanted to write a book that actually quashes that and is actually saying, actually, a life without alcohol is a big, wonderful, incredible, exciting, adventurous life.
Oh, that is such a great way to sort of wrap that up, Sarah. I love that. Thank you. Can you just describe, what does gray area drinking actually mean?
So it describes the place between someone who doesn't drink or maybe drinks every now and then and someone who is what you would call a physically dependent drinker. So someone mm-hmm. who does drink every day and has that what we would have kind of stereotypically called an alcoholic. So gray area drink is in the middle. It's not people that meet the criteria for physical dependence on alcohol. So gray area drinkers, they don't drink in the morning. They may not drink every day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they aren't physically dependent on needing to have withdrawal support to come off alcohol, but they're probably drinking well above the 10 units a week. So 10 units in most bottles of wine would be one bottle of wine a week. And it's recommended we don't go above that. Mm-hmm. And so gray area drinkers are often drinking more than that. They are using alcohol to manage stress. They're using alcohol as their reward, and their efforts to change their drinking, if they realize it's impacting them, they're either successful for a short time, but it doesn't last, or they simply can't do it. They go, oh, I'm going to have a clean week. I'm going to have no booze this week. And then by Wednesday, it's like, maybe I can just have one. That would be okay. So there's a lot of internal chatter if you're a gray area drinker of, oh, I said I wasn't going to drink tonight, but maybe I could just have one. If I have one tonight, I won't drink tomorrow. And there's all this negotiation and these rules around drinking.
Constantly talking yourself in and out of it.
It sounds very much like Australia's binge drinking culture, doesn't it? Where most people would say, I'm not an alcoholic, like I don't need alcohol, but then they're actually planning for the binge on the weekend, which is a really interesting thing. And I'm sure the UK has the same problem, which is that we've normalized a binge drinking culture, often highlighted through things like sports people, you know, athletes that, you know, behave certain ways, are seen in public in certain ways. And everyone goes, oh, see, it's normal. Look, you know, all the footy players do that. Or, you know, it's just something that even I grew up in sport, it was culturally normal to binge drink, to have off season, you know, and everyone run muck and go crazy and drink excessively. Interesting challenge we have to overcome this normalization. It's a huge conversation to say that you can actually have fun without alcohol.
Exactly. And they say that they reckon about 3 billion people across the world fit in that grey area drinking space. Mm-hmm. But the problem is grey area drinkers don't consider themselves bad enough to make a change. I'm not that bad. I don't drink in the morning. I don't drink every day. But nor are they ever really maximising their potential in life, because I don't think you can if you're constantly feeling a bit meh. And feeling, you know, that 5 out of 10, not great sleep, a little bit, you know, low level anxiety all the time. But most people don't realize they're feeling 5 out of 10 because they never take a long enough break from alcohol to know the difference.
And I bet you get asked all the time, how much were you drinking? Because people need to compare and contrast, don't they? They need to know, like, well, if it's that bad, then I'm not that bad. Or, oh gosh, that's not as much. What do you say when people say, how much were you drinking? Like, why did you stop?
Yeah, and I always say it's not, the answer to that question is not a number, the answer is a feeling. And if you notice that alcohol's taking more than it's giving and it's starting to impact you, then it might be time to make a change. I've got clients who drink one or two glasses most nights, and even that's too much for them. I've got others that don't drink three nights a week, but then they drink a bottle and a half on the other four nights. It completely varies. It's not a number. It's simply about noticing, can I change if I want to? Can I stop? And I think a really good question to ask for people to ask themselves is, if I said to you today, I want you to take 90 days off booze just from today, and we're going to have a break and we're going to see how we feel. If the first initial thought is, oh, I can't do that. If the first initial thought is fear, if the first initial thought is there's no way I could, then we're in that gray area. Because people that don't have any kind of issue with alcohol will just be like, okay, if you want me to do 90 days, I'll do 90 days. Whereas people that are using it for something, then a fear will come up. They'll be like, oh, well, how could I go to that party and not drink? Or how am I going to deal with my stressful life and not have a drink at the end? That's the only thing that gets me through. So it's interesting to notice for your listeners what even is their response to that question.
Oh, that's such a good way to qualify it as well. I think that if you were to go 90 days, how would that make you feel? Ash, this actually reminds me so much of our trip to Melbourne just recently. So Sarah, Dr. Ashley and I were teaching in Melbourne, I think it was two or three weekends ago, and you know, this is sort of 12 hours a day. This is like very advanced sort of postgraduate sort of teaching that we're doing, you know, in person. And so we've got to be on, we've got to be so sharp and on. I never, ever, ever drink alcohol the night before I teach, ever. And then on the Saturday night, we were having dinner at one of my best friend's places. We walk in, they just hand us a glass of champagne. He's already making cocktails, like, you know, and my rubber arm was just twisted so quickly, even though I'd drawn that line in the sand and I said, I'm absolutely not having any alcohol tonight. And Ash, you were much better at...
I just say no. No, thanks.
Before I'd even given it a second thought, I'd already had my first sip of champagne. And then I slept terribly that night. I felt like absolute rubbish the next day. And absolutely did not feel like I was on my game. Like, we still did a great job. We still, you know, everyone still got a lot out of it. But I definitely suffered because of that. Sarah, when women are in that sort of situation, like, what advice would you have given me about, you know, preparing myself to go into that? Because I had that line in the sand and I knew that, you know, I'm not drinking tonight because I have to be on tomorrow. This is not going to happen. And then it just, before I'd even given it a second thought, I was like, oh shit, how did that happen?
Yeah. And I think Andrea saw me drink the first like G&T she's ever seen me drink. I was just like, are you having a gin and tonic? And I'm like, I shouldn't have done that to you, but it was just more the thing
that
I chose to
permission. That was like, right, okay.
I take full responsibility. No.
Yeah, Ash, it was all your fault. No, I'm just kidding.
So this is the play out, right? What you've just seen here, Sarah, is what happens when girlfriends go out together, when we, you know, go to dinner, we have a plan in action. And I said, I'm not drinking. But for me, a selective choice of a qualified amount of gin where I actually got him to make that shorter. You know, like, it was very consciously going, I love the flavor. I'm okay to accept responsibility of this little half amount of gin that he was going to put probably a full solid serving. And I was like, no, I just want a splash. I just want a taste. That's all I want. And of course I opened the gateway for Andrew's feelings. Like, oh, okay, then if you're having one, then I'm having one. Like, I was like, oh no. You know, it was that feeling. I'm sure it happens all the time. How do we help ourselves in those situations?
And I've written an entire chapter in my book on like navigating friendships and those social situations. But what I always say is a couple of things. So number one, decide before what your game plan is going to be. So what are you going to say? Visualize yourself what you're going to say when people say to you, do you want to have a drink? Because that had caught me out before. I remember I was like, one of the second times I'd taken a break from alcohol, I was about 67 days. I was in Singapore visiting clients. I was in a recruitment role at the time. And it was a client that I'd always got drunk with. And we'd met in a bar and he just didn't even ask me what I wanted to drink. He just went to the bar, got a bottle of wine and put a glass in front of me. And I just went, oh, okay. And I just drank it because I hadn't planned, yes. I hadn't prepared. So really planning and preparing and thinking about what you're going to say, what you're going to say if someone asks you, why aren't you drinking? Like planning that in your mind, deciding what is appropriate in that scenario. If it's close friends, you might be like, oh, alcohol's been really impacting my menopause symptoms and my anxiety. I want to take a break. If it's someone you've never met before, it might be like, I'm on antibiotics. I'm training for a marathon. Like whatever it might be, it's okay to tell a white lie if it just takes the spotlight off you. And then the other thing I always say is play it forward. And so don't just think about what's the first 20 minutes going to be like after having this drink. think about, well, am I going to be happy with one, or is that likely to lead to more than one? Because for most grey area drinkers, they're never happy with one. Mm. How am I going to feel in the morning? Is this, am I going to show up as the version of me that I want to be tomorrow? Coming back to my reasons of why I didn't want to drink in the first place, you know, and really getting an idea around that. And also sometimes it's about going, is this event going to be something that I really want to go to as someone who's not drinking? Because there are certain things that we may just not want to go to alcohol free. Like a client emailed me the other day and she went, Sarah, I feel like I'm never going to have fun again. I've just spent the whole of like Sunday at this beer tasting festival with all my mates. And I was watching them get absolutely like pissed. And it was really boring. And they were repeating themselves. And I was like, of course you can have fun. But what on earth were you thinking going to a beer tasting all day event if you're not tasting beer? Like, we've got to pick and choose what we go to. And so it can be great to give a heads up to someone and go, I've got to get up super early tomorrow. I'm not going to be drinking. I can't wait to see you, but I'll probably be leaving at X time. Gives them a heads up. So all of those things we can do really just help in the moment.
That's so clever. And that really landed for me when you said the, what version of yourself do you need to show up as tomorrow? And that's exactly, you know, the sort of story that I had in my head, for example, for that, you know, when we were in Melbourne, when I was like, I'm not drinking because I need to be on my game the next day, but I hadn't thought it through or how to navigate the scenario if I am, you know, offered, or I just, you know, hadn't done that sort of forward planning yet. So very, very interesting. Sarah, while your information is great for both men and women, I certainly see, and the exception to the rule here for me, or for what I see in practice, is when couples are trying to conceive, then the no alcohol rule goes for both of them, because even, you know, binge drinking for men, which is considered five drinks, dramatically drops, you know, their sperm count and really affects their fertility potential. And guys have quite a hard time sort of getting their head around that. So that is my absolute line in the sand for when I'm working with fertility couples. But I feel like the effects of alcohol are so much more significant for women, and I feel like it really disrupts their hormones, you know, so much more. Can you kind of go through why it is that alcohol has higher risk factors in terms of our health for women?
Yeah, so there's three key reasons why alcohol affects women differently to men. So number one, body to body, man and woman standing next to each other, a man will have a higher concentration of water than a woman does. That's just physiologically. So more alcohol is diluted in the male body than in the female body. Secondly, men contain and produce more of an enzyme called alcohol dehydrogenase, ALDH. And this is the enzyme that breaks down, metabolizes, and removes alcohol from the body. So men have more of that. So a man and women have less. And for a woman, that amount of ALDH decreases as we get older and as we start going through menopause. So that's why women find that hangovers, anxiety, night sweats, insomnia, all of the impact of alcohol may not have been the case in their 20s, but can certainly become the case in their 40s. So for a man and woman drinking the same amount of alcohol, more alcohol content enters a woman's bloodstream, meaning a woman is more at risk of the seven types of cancer that alcohol causes, of liver disease, of heart disease, of impact on their immune health, on their brain health, and everything like that. And then the third reason is that for women, we have hormones, and estrogen, when it's circulating at higher times of the month, it means that we become more intoxicated. So for the same amount of alcohol drunk at two different times of the month, we will get more drunk when we have higher circulating estrogen. And when our estrogen is higher, we will often find that we get higher hangover symptoms. And also we know about the increased risk of breast cancer with a result of alcohol and that higher circulating estrogen.
Sarah, just on that, are you, because of the high circulating estrogen, are you aware of the difference with alcohol consumption for women who are using hormone replacement therapy or on oral contraceptives?
So for HRT, and this always, always blows my mind, there's so much stigma around HRT as being called a link to breast cancer. So there was a study, I think it was in the 80s or 90s, wasn't it, that came out. And since
the Women's
then,
Health Initiative.
Right. And since then, that has actually been dismissed by a lot of menopause doctors and said that the information wasn't actually correct and accurate, but the media had picked it up and sensationalized it. And a lot of women had this concern around breast cancer and HRT. But what we know is, and I found this, I was actually reading this report yesterday, that when we are on HRT, the increased amount of circulating estrogen causes us to have a higher risk of breast cancer if we drink alcohol when we're on HRT. And yet, I've done a poll in my group and asked, and I've got like nearly 20,000 in my group, and said, how many of you, when you were put on HRT, were warned to reduce or stop alcohol consumption because of the risk of breast cancer? Two women out of thousands were told this by their doctor.
And Sarah, the initiative that you were talking about, or the study that was done previously, there was lots of problems with the actual methodology of the study, and the type of hormone replacement therapy that they were using. And it's quite different to some of the options that are available now.
Yes.
But also, they don't consider individual risk factors or individual metabolism and clearance of estrogen as to whether or that's safe or unsafe, just based on how that person's sort of estrogen detoxification pathways work and all of those sorts of things, which would have increased their risk factors. So there's a lot to that study. And Ash, I think that's probably an individual podcast that we should sort of definitely do at another time. But isn't that just so interesting about the HRT? And I wonder if those risk factors are the same for women who are on oral contraceptives as well, because sometimes the estrogen in those compounds can be up to 10 times stronger than what the body is making itself. So I think that's something that would be really important to understand for women who are using hormonal contraceptives.
But isn't it interesting though that amongst all of that, you know, guidance, there's not this common ground, which is don't consume alcohol, consume less alcohol. It's more, again, this lifestyle choice that's not considered a drug that it is. And I think it's frustrating to hear how many women in your group were not even mentioned or told that irrespective of their choice of HRT, you are in this era of your life where alcohol is not good for you. You need to consider reducing or removing it from your life. Like, no one says that. Why isn't anyone brave enough to say that? And I'm glad you are, because it's honestly creating this shift amongst individuals that can then shift amongst friendship groups. I mean, imagine if one woman realizes how much better she feels and she goes back to her girlfriends and says, guys, you know, like, seriously, why don't we all just give this a go? You could quickly shift, society away from this normalization and acceptance of alcohol as a standard drug. And I think I always say drug because it alters, you know, mental and physical faculties, which means it's in every sense of the word a drug. Just like caffeine's a psychoactive stimulant, it's a drug, and we're using it as, you know, this depressant on our senses, which for most people is obviously, you mentioned, it's an escape mechanism, isn't it? It's a form of escapism. It's a way to numb or dumb or dull any pain points in our life, which for a lot of us, sometimes it's insidious. We don't even know why we're using alcohol as a drug. And I'm very fortunate it's not been a big player of my life, but there was a small window in my life and I realized that, yes, alcohol absolutely does, you know, temporarily ease a broken heart, but it doesn't, the next morning you don't wake up feeling any different or better. And it's that interesting feeling of going, I can see why people get stuck on this, but obviously I had other coping mechanisms, so that was a pathway, you know, through discomfort for me. But how do you help people find more positive solutions to life? Because obviously if we consider it a drug to reduce some discomfort, how do you help people identify that? Because I think that's probably one of the hardest things to do, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's a whole chapter in my book on this, which a lot of women are emailing me about going, thank you so much for writing that chapter, because it has really supported me to step back and reflect on why do I use alcohol?
Yeah. Well,
because for so many women, alcohol's not the problem. Alcohol's the solution.
Yeah.
And we're turning to alcohol as a solution for stress, for unresolved trauma, for loneliness, for boredom, for the fact that we have a life where we are just doing everything for everybody else and we have nothing in our life that is for us. And so we're turning to alcohol because we can drink alcohol whilst we're doing the ironing, unloading the dishwasher, making the dinner, helping with the homework, you know, and doing all the things. And going to a yoga class or going doing some meditation involves you stepping out of the family home. And there's a lot of guilt that I'm finding women have with actually taking time for themselves. And the way that I coach around that is, well, hey, let's start thinking about your daughter and your son. what are you role modeling to them? Do you want your daughter growing up thinking that mum's job is to be available for the kids 24/7 and to do everything for them? Or do you want to role model to your daughter and to your son that it is okay for mum to take time for herself, that mum is also allowed to take time for herself? And so a lot of women find that works. When they think about the role modeling, they can give themselves more permission to take that time for themselves.
And Sarah, you have this line in your book, or there's this quote that alcohol is the only drug we have to justify not taking. And I think that that's such a powerful statement, because you're so right that when you do get that sort of pressure from your girlfriends or that, you know, that peer pressure, it's like really thinking about that and acknowledging it as the drug it is, I think is probably something to help shift that headspace around it too. Okay, so Sarah, what are your biggest tips or your take homes for women who want to try and either give up drinking or try the 90-day challenge or to shift their relationship with alcohol? What tips would you give them?
So I think the first thing is, let's get honest and reflect on how much are we drinking, when and why. Mm-hmm. So just start to be curious about what that is. So if I wake on a Wednesday morning and say, I'm not going to drink tonight, but then I find myself drinking at 5 o'clock, what's been the trigger? Is it stress and overwhelm? Is it habitual? Is it loneliness or sadness or frustration or whatever? Like, start to get curious about, why do I use alcohol? Is it that I've got a lot of social anxiety and I can't even consider socializing with my friends without having alcohol? So many of my clients discover in sobriety that they're actually introverts, and they thought that they were these big party animals that love being around people all the time. And then they've gone, it was just the alcohol actually giving them that fake, illusion of being a confident, outgoing person, when in actual fact, they're way quieter and way softer than they actually had ever, realized. And what removing alcohol does is it actually lets you get to know yourself. Because what I find is, so many women get to this age in their life and they don't even have that deep soul connection to their authentic self, because they don't know who their authentic self is, because they've spent most of their life masking it in terms of either, through chronic people pleasing, through using alcohol, through whatever it is. And so it's that real journey. So I say, get curious about why you're using alcohol and how much you're drinking, and then take a break and experiment and notice, well, what's different when I'm not drinking? Like, notice your sleep, notice your energy, notice your self-talk, notice your anxiety, notice your motivation, notice how you are with your kids. Like, all of these things, just give yourself a break and then score those things out of 10 on a weekly basis as you're going through, and just start seeing what the changes are. And then when we get to the end of that, we've got information, and then we can go, right, well, which version of me and which version of my life do I like better?
Yes, it's like that sums it up, doesn't it? And it's the approach to being honest with yourself. And that's sometimes the hardest thing to do, is to get that honesty. And just to, from our experiences with clients as well, how do we help women who are thinking, well, a lot of people meet under the guise of alcohol. A lot of marriages are founded on social connection through drinking together, through partying together. Like, for some people, they're scared to leave that because that also is some sort of disconnect in their relationship. How do you help couples manage that? Because I can imagine it'd be a challenge if you think, I'm not drinking. Oh, you're no fun anymore. Where's the girl I married? Like, that kind of feeling of pressure, because there's a shift in values somewhere.
Totally. I had a client whose husband said to her, if you stop drinking, I'll leave you.
Oof. Well, yeah, right. So that's what I'm talking, the foundations that create that.
That's not uncommon.
Yeah, I married you because you're fun.
And because if they've got a dysfunctional relationship with alcohol and then their partner stops drinking, A, that's shining a light on their drinking. Mm-hmm. B, they're like, well, what are we going to do together? Because I don't want to get up at 6 a.m. and go for walks in the country. I still want to get pissed on a Saturday night. And so it can really cause that divide. And so, again, it's something I've written extensively about in my book, because it's something that comes up time and time and time again, is how do you navigate that if you want to remove alcohol, your partner doesn't, and it's never our place to tell anyone what they should and shouldn't do. Mm. And also my own personal journey, because it was something I had to go through myself when I made that decision to remove alcohol.
Man, I know what I'd be saying to that guy.
Yeah, right.
I believe you here. Oh, my goodness. Sarah, I want to just give a little shout out to your book because it is so beautiful. And our readers can find it in any good bookstore and I'm sure online at Amazon and Booktopia and all of those sort of areas. Sarah, can they get it directly from your website as well?
No, so it's not on my website. So it's okay. Amazon, Booktopia, Dimex, Big W, Target, Kmart, so all of the big stores
everywhere.
Around Australia. And then if your listeners, anyone who's in the UK or overseas, it's on Amazon.
Yeah, great. And Sarah, how can our listeners find out more about you?
My book is obviously a great place to start, but I have a free Facebook community called the Women's Wellbeing Collective, where you'd be welcomed with open arms. Even if you're not on that journey of removing alcohol yet, I think it's great to be in a community of other women who are loud and proud talking about what an incredible life they're having without alcohol, because we're often getting, you know, other messages around that. And then Instagram. So I'm very present on Instagram, which is just my name, at Sarah Rosbach, and you can find me there.
Oh, and congratulations. I think since we saw you last as well, you've won a few awards from the Women's Changing the World Awards. You were the People's Choice Award, which is extraordinary. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate that I have been the recipient of a lot of awards over the last 12 months.
Extraordinary.
And I think it's being recognised that the work I'm doing, it's not just changing the lives of the women I work with, it's changing the lives of their families. I got a letter from a client's son and he said, "Dear Sarah, thank you for giving me my mum back."
So ladies listening, if this is something that resonates with you, or if it's someone you know close to heart and you want to help them, then get a copy of Sarah's book in their hands and just gently let them know that there's always a way forward. Because I think this is the challenge. Sometimes it's not necessarily for ourselves. It's someone we care and love, and we can see, like that son looking at his mother thinking, how do I get mum to help herself? And sometimes all it takes is just a step. I love you. I care about you. This might be a path. And look, if that person puts it down and says, whatever, then it's not right now, but hopefully down the track it'll be an opportunity for them to feel safe enough to say, maybe this is something I need to address, and if not now, then when, you know, and they might have a way forward from there. So thank you for the extraordinary work you're doing, because clearly it's being recognized in a big way, and rightfully so.
Thank you so much.
Sarah, thank you again. So, ladies, you've been listening to Wellness Women Radio. We are the Wellness Women, Dr. Ashley Bond and Dr. Andrea Huddleston, joined by the incredible Sarah Rosbach, the author of Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free. So until next week, be well.
This has been a production of thewellnesscouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on facebook.com/thewellnesscouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.